Zecher Nishmas, my great uncle, Mr. Bernie Kopfer, Rav Baruch ben Rav Avram Yitzchak, whose yard site was on the 13th of Kislev, Hadar Borchus, who was murdered in a terrorist attack, and a chavrusa of mine, who was nifter very suddenly, Rabbi Elchanan Zamber. In Shir 14, we are going to examine chapter 7, and here we will discuss some of the forbidden parts of a kosher animal. Specifically, we're going to look at chilev, which is a type of fat which is forbidden, and dam, blood, which is also forbidden. There are numerous psukim in Vayikra and Devarim that mention the prohibition of blood and forbidden fat. Some verses mention them together, while others mention them separately. In case you'd like to look some of them up, I'll just mention them. The parakim, if you look in Vayikra 3, 7, 17, in Devarim Perek 12, you can find a whole bunch of psukim related to forbidden fat and blood. Consuming blood and or chilev are both negative commandments that are both punishable by kares. Now kares is a very serious punishment because it means that the individual loses their everlasting life. The only other dietary law to have this stringent punishment is eating chametz on Pesach, as we discussed earlier. In terms of chametz, when one eats chametz on Pesach, he's showing that Hashem does not guide us in history. In other words, he doesn't believe in Yetzias Mitzrayim, and therefore that person is cut off. He is removed from among the children of Israel. We will see that chilev and dam will have similar rationales, and that even though they have many rules that are very different from each other, they're also related to each other, and throughout Tanakh we find the phrase chilev vidam. So let's begin with a discussion of chilev. There are two types of animal fat. One is called shuman, and shuman is permissible fat. And the second type is called chilev, and chilev is forbidden. And this includes all the types of fats that were placed on the Mizbeach as part of a sacrifice. And we learn these types of fats from Vayikra 3, Psukim 3 and 4. Now, the Gemara in Chulin includes four categories from these verses. Just to give some idea, the Gemara lists fat spread on the intestines and the abdomen area, fat over various parts of the stomach and bowels, the kidneys with certain fats, and either the diaphragm or a lobe that sticks out from the liver. So all these things are usur. Clearly, one needs to be an expert to know what is and what is not included in this list. But either way, all these things are forbidden, always, regardless of the mikdash and sacrifices being or not being in existence. That makes absolutely no difference. And we know this from Vayikra 3:17, which says, Chukas olam ledoroseichem, b'chol moshevoseichem, kol chilev v'chol dam, lo sochelu. It shall be an everlasting statute throughout your generations in all your dwellings. All fat and all blood you shall not eat. Now, chilev only applies to behemos, not to chayos or to ophos. There are other fats that are forbidden, called chutin and kirumim, which are removed from the animal, but if a person would eat these, you do not incur the strict punishment of kares. So it's a regular lav. Now, removing all of these fats is done by a person who is an expert in this area, and the act is called porging. If any of this fat is cooked, so everything associated with the food, so in other words, the pot, silverware used to eat with, and all these types of similar things, it all becomes unfit for use in addition to kares. Now, clearly, we're not talking about chutin and kerumim here. We're talking about the actual chilev. Now, in many countries, and the United States, as far as I know, is included in this, the custom is that we do not eat the hind quarters of animals, and this gets us out of many problems. Let's move on now to discuss the prohibition of dam, of blood. So our sources list for us three different types of forbidden blood. So the first is called Dam HaNefesh, which is lifeblood, and this is the initial flow of blood after the animal is shechted. The punishment for consuming this rush of blood, called the Kiluach, is Kares, as it says in Devarim 12:23. The second kind of blood is what follows after the Dam HaNefesh, and is called Dam HaTamtzis. It is allowed to eat this blood, but there is no Kares involved. And the source, even if it's not explicitly written in the Pasuk, is learned out from Devarim 12:24. And finally, the third type of dam is called Dam Ha'ivarim, and this is blood that is absorbed in the limbs. We would call that maybe capillary blood. Once this blood leaves its location, one is not allowed to consume it, and this is also prohibited by a lav learned from Devarim 12:25, again, even though it's not explicitly stated. Now, in contrast to chelev, the prohibition of dam applies to all chayos, behemos, and ofos, but not to fish. Now that we have discussed some of the basic background and halachos of chelev and dam, we are ready to see some of the underlying ideas behind them, keeping in mind our rule, of course, that finite minds can only attempt to give reasons, and we keep the mitzvos no matter what. The halachos relating to forbidden fats and blood are very fundamental to the Jewish outlook on life, and the punishment for transgressing them is very serious. In the words of the author, they come with awesome sanctions. So first, we will examine the ideas of Rav Hirsch. Perhaps at a later point, we could examine some of the other Rishonim. There are three things to keep in mind as we begin to examine Rav Hirsch's approach. So the first thing is, what is the physiological purpose of fat and blood, and what do they do for the animal? Number two, both blood and fat are used in the Beis HaMikdash during Korbanos, during the sacrifices, to express certain moral truths. And finally, number three, humans, either through their health or personality, psychologically, spiritually, in other words, in some way, can be affected by ingesting these substances. So you have to accept these three categories that we just mentioned in order to accept Rav Hirsch's approach. Chelev, animal fat, is used for the animal and for upkeep of the animal. Now, in distinction to this, chalav, milk, is used to continue the species, right? Clearly, that's how an animal nurses its young. Chelev is the reserve, and it provides protection to the animal, both in terms of protection and in terms of hunger. Chelev, therefore, is the best of the animal. It is the saved-up riches of the animal, and we find that the Torah uses the word chelev in a metaphorical sense to represent the best. Like, for example, ichlu es chelev ha'aretz. So examples like that, we see that chelev is used to mean the best. Both chelev and dam are part of the sacrificial service, and we could see this from Vayikra 3:16, which says as follows: V'hiktiram ha'kohen ha'mizbecha lecha misha l'reach nichoach kol chelev la'ashem. And the priests shall burn them upon the altar. It is the food of the offering made by fire for a sweet savor. All the fat is Hashem's. And in 17 it says, Chukas olam l'doros sechem, b'chol moshevo sechem, kol chilev v'chol dam, lo sochilu. It shall be a perpetual statue throughout your generations, in all your dwellings, that you shall eat neither fat nor blood. So we see that the Torah tells us that all the fat is Hashem's. And this means that the best is for God. We can understand the meaning that in our own lives, self-centeredness or egoism should be, to the extent possible, excluded from our lives. Animal life is self-centered. The animal does what it needs to do in order to survive, and this is expressed by the chelev. And fat is the symbol for materialism and selfishness. By placing chelev on the mizbeach, we express specifically that our physical activities and possessions, in addition to our spiritual life, should all be dedicated to Hashem. And this is, of course, a symbolic idea. In terms of consuming chalev, however, we cannot partake of it since it represents the selfishness in the animal. So it's a double-edged sword for us. For us, all human existence must be for God. By not having chalev, we show that just working toward acquiring items is not our purpose or our goal in life. However, our money and possessions that are used to help society, those are holy. To quote the author, he says, "Thus, even the material side of our earthly existence, which is symbolized by chalev, is elevated to the realm of the godly, or as the prophet Yeshaya expressed it, we cooperate with God to plant the heavens and lay the foundations of the earth." Similarly, and with direct reference to the ennoblement by the Jewish dietary laws of the merely physical aspect of food, the prophet Zechariah yearned for the day when every pot in Yerushalayim and in Yehuda shall be holy to the Lord of hosts. Okay, we said in Vayikra 3:3 and 3:4, a variety of organs, for example, we said the kidneys, the loins, the liver, that are all located under the diaphragm. And we explained that organs under the diaphragm are involved in lower life functions, in general, of nutrition and generation, which are basic animal urges of digestion and reproduction. The kidneys themselves are considered throughout Tanakh and in the oral law to be related to emotion and to sensuality, and the Gemara lists emotions related to other organs as well, such as a relationship between the liver and anger. So we take all these organs with these lower life functions and emotions, we bring them up as part of a shlamim, a peace offering. And the shlamim teaches us that anyone who wants to be happy and at peace with Hashem needs to free his personality of selfish ideas to the extent possible. We do not live only for ourselves. A person should rather focus on serving God and his fellow men. By offering these portions on the Mizbeach, we express our desire that all of our physical urges should be raised above mere physical necessity and, to quote the author, taken into the sphere of morally free and holy action, which further godliness and pure humanity on earth. Now, in Bereishis, the Torah tells us about Cain and Hevel. We know that Hevel brought an offering from the very best of his flock, and the Torah uses the word chalev to describe that his animals were the very best. Hevel understood that his relationship with Hashem was first and foremost. Cain, on the other hand, he brought some produce, the Torah tells us. It was nothing that was particularly special. It wasn't particularly choice produce. So we see from here that the attitude of the person bringing a korban is absolutely essential to the offering. So I'm going to read the next paragraph inside since I can't really do it justice. Centuries later, Malachi, the last Hebrew prophet, castigates that objectionable attitude in man, which makes him offer to God only the second best, the lean and the sick, as the prophet calls it. Thus religion, that is our relationship to the divine, instead of being man's master interest, the cornerstone of his life, and the social edifice erected by him, becomes merely a small compartment within his life. God, instead of being the center of man's existence, the guiding force in his life, is relegated to the house of worship. Religion is reduced to worship, to a few hours of prayer. But it should permeate and rule life in all its manifestations, personal, economic, social, and even political. There should be no sphere of life outside the influence of God and His moral law. Otherwise, religion becomes meaningless, impotent, and without influence on the great issues of human existence. Prayer and worship, it is true, are essential parts of all personal religion. But they are a beginning, only a preparation for life's activities. For the Jew to be religious means more than to pray. It connotes the acknowledgement that all human activities fall within one scheme whose character is determined by the moral law and the spiritual destiny of mankind. That is why the laws of the Torah extend their rule to all human concerns, prayer and worship, food and domestic life, business and state activities, and international relations, no less than personal discipline and character training. Such a dedicated and all-embracing religious life is possible only by denouncing egoism, by working not for self, but for others.
We can conclude that Chilev represents selfish aims and materialism. Schumann, on the other hand, permitted fats are a direct part of the animal. Chilev is usher for us to eat, but must be placed on the Mizbeach. This teaches us the basic principles of a morally sound person and proper focus of our possessions throughout life. So this concludes part number 1 of chapter 14. And next time in part 2, we will get into detail regarding the prohibition of consuming blood.